Medical updates on COVID-19 in Maine. People over 70 in Maine can now make an appointment to be vaccinated for COVID-19, but the state is careful to say that appointments depend on availability of the vaccine, which changes week to week. This comes amidst a continuing surge in COVID-19 cases in the state and worries about a new variant of the virus now found in other New England states. Meantime, Maine's hospitals are trying to keep up with more patients and exhausted staffs, and researchers continue to learn more about the COVID-19 virus. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Dr. Dora Mills of Maine Health and Dr. Michael Schmitz join us to answer your questions about vaccines, testing, treatment, and more. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The pandemic continues to rage while vaccinations gradually reach more Mainers. Today, we'll get answers about your questions about COVID-19 and vaccines and how health providers are handling increasing numbers of coronavirus patients. My guests are Dr. Dora Mills, who is Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health, and Dr. Michael Schmitz, Emergency Department Attending Physician with Southern Maine Healthcare and the Medical Director for the York County Incident Management Team that works on vaccine deployment. We invite your questions and comments. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome both of you back to Maine Calling, and really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Dr. Mills, I'll start with you. In recent days, we have seen a surge of COVID cases. Last week, some daily totals exceeding 800 per day. How is Maine Medical Center and how are the other hospitals in the Maine health system doing in terms of keeping up with the surge?
Well, we are keeping up with the surge, but we are extremely busy. I mean, our hospitals, our healthcare workers, our nurses, our doctors are very, very busy. We have levels of numbers of patients in our hospitals that are far exceed the numbers we saw last spring. And they've been very high at those levels exceeding last spring for several weeks now. So, and we're seeing, you know, also other people with other illnesses, you know, so we are, people are just, you know, pretty overstretched, but they're doing okay. I mean, we've been redeploying people to taking care of, you know, different types of patients, and they're able to pull in our troops, and they're, you know, we're doing okay. And I know Dr. Schmitz, Mike is down at Southern Maine Medical Center, Southern Maine Healthcare, which has been extremely busy, as well as Maine Medical Center and Midcoast Hospital and our other, you know, 8 hospitals. So maybe he's got some information from there.
Sure. Dr. Schmitz, I'd love to know how you're doing and also what it's like in the emergency room.
Well, sure. Thank you very much, Dora. Well, since the last time we talked, we've definitely seen an uptick in patients with severe illness because of COVID, especially hitting our geriatric patient geriatric population very hard, both people who are at home and trying to isolate and our nursing home population. We're keeping up, though. We're very busy. And since the last time we spoke, we definitely saw a wave that probably had something to do with people visiting around the holidays. So that had a definite impact that was very predictable and that we've had to surge and respond to.
Okay. And Dr. Schmitz, how are the folks you work with holding up?
I'd say that we're doing well. We're working hard to support each other. And people are, as Dora said, shifting and repurposing in order to support the operations, both for patients who are dealing with COVID and also to address the needs of the other patients in the emergency department.
Dr. Mills, last week the state announced that, and your organization, among others, announced they are taking appointments for COVID vaccines for people 70 and older. Do you know how many appointments have been made? And kind of explain to us how you're doing that, how you're making appointments, even though you're not sure week to week how much of the vaccine you're receiving.
Yes, well, it has been definitely a balancing act. So in addition to taking care of our patients, both COVID patients and everybody else, we are also redeploying people to work on the vaccine clinics. To me, this is probably the most it is the most important thing we can do, is to get as many shots into arms as quickly as possible. You know, the pandemic is like a fire, and the vaccine is water. It is the water that douses that fire and will help simmer down this pandemic. So yes, we did open up just in the last couple of days to taking appointments for people who are 70 and older. We, as you might have seen on the news, that we had over 18,000 calls yesterday, and actually I understand that there were over 70,000 calls, but they were from about 18,000 people. So our phone lines are very well staffed, but clearly, you know, there's no phone center that can take that many calls at one time. So we did make appointments for, I think, about 4,000 people over 70 years of age in our different clinics for this week and next week. We're not opening up appointments too far out because we want to make sure we have enough vaccine on hand. So, but we have been making appointments for this week and next week. We hope to open up more slots, more, you know, appointments soon. And we're just trying to get people redeployed to these vaccine clinics and staff them up, because we want to get as many shots in arms as quickly as possible. So we're working very hard to do that.
So, Dr. Mills, when you say 4,000, that's 2,000 this week, 2,000 next week?
You know, it's not exactly evenly, but something like that.
Okay. And Dr. Schmitz, what about in your organization? How are you deploying vaccines? How are you getting them out there as they come in York County and in Southern Maine Health, at Southern Maine Health?
Well, as part of Maine Health, we're under the guidance of the plan that Dora just outlined. So
okay.
We certainly support that plan.
Yeah. Okay. And we are standing up additional clinic sites, too. So we have I think about 8 clinic sites right now, and we are standing up additional ones over the next few days. And we're some of our smaller clinics are moving to larger centers. So we are ramping up as quickly as we can. I mean, we literally have people working, you know, 18 hours a day, day and night, and 7 days a week to try to ramp up as quickly as we can. So we're just thrilled we were able to get a lot of older people in for vaccine this week and next week. And we're, again, trying to open up some more appointments even for next week, and certainly for the weeks after, as soon as we find out how much vaccine we have on hand for the week after next.
I want to ask you all a little bit about COVID-19 itself as we are, you know, moving into what I think our 11th month of this, and as we learn more and more. Dr. Schmitz, I'll start with you. What are you seeing among patients today when they come in with COVID symptoms? Is it similar to what it was a few months ago, or is it kind of changing?
I'd say that the pattern of symptoms is remaining the same. And in fact, as we learn more about the vaccine, more about the illness, we're picking up on it very quickly. So that the pattern of the symptoms and the presentation is largely unchanged.
Okay, so you're seeing the same kind of symptoms. How about treating them? Are you better able to treat people with COVID than you were, or has the way in which you treat it stayed pretty much the same for a while now?
It's been great to have access to some of the evidence about the treatments that are most effective, such as monoclonal antibodies, the use of dexamethasone, and then the availability of remdesivir, and to have clear guidelines from the CDC about what the most effective treatments are and what the best way to time them is. So it as challenging as COVID feels and helping these people is, it's helpful to have that guidance and to have a plan. So that feels somewhat empowering as an emergency department physician to have those tools and that guidance.
Dr. Mills, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, too, I think that in general, from last spring to now, so last spring surge to now, looking across our 11 hospitals, the trend has been that we're seeing a lot more younger people who are severely sick. Last spring, it was the vast majority were older, older than 65, older than 70. And while they still are at highest risk for severe disease, we're also seeing, younger people get quite sick. And I think it's just because there's so much more illness. You know, our rates of illness are so much higher than last spring when we had that shutdown and we really flattened the curve quite well. But now with the state pretty opened up right now, or people going about their business in a lot of usual ways and getting together with people, the rates of illness we're seeing are much, much higher than last spring. And so as a result of that, with more and more people sick, we're seeing a lot more even younger people who are seriously ill as well as older people.
I want to ask you about the mutated version of the virus we've heard so much about. I think it's being referred to as the UK mutation. Dr. Mills, I understand we have not seen that yet in Maine, but that it has been identified in Massachusetts and Connecticut. Do you expect that to show up in Maine any day now? And if so, how will that change the overall scenario and how you at Maine Health treat patients?
So, yes, I expect that we're going to find it here. If it's not already here, at some point we'll be identifying it. It's just a matter of time. My concern is that this really, the vaccine effort is a race against time. It's a race against this mutation, because what we know from the CDC projections from just several days ago is that there is a very good chance this mutation could become the dominant virus strain that we see in the U.S. by March, as early as March. And what we saw in the U.K., where that exact phenomenon happened, is that they saw another surge. But you see, looking at their data, they had finished their peak, it looked like, from their early winter peak of illness. And then they had this mutation take over, this strain take over, and their rates of illness have skyrocketed, their hospitalizations have gone up, and their deaths have gone up. It doesn't seem to be a more virulent virus, but it is seems about 50% more contagious. So if you have a lot more people with the disease, you're going to have more numbers of people who are seriously ill. So that's my concern, that we're in a race against time against this mutation, this variant virus. And so that's why we want to really get a lot of large-scale vaccine clinics up and running as quickly as we can and get shots in arms as quickly as we can, because that will help calm down the numbers, bring the numbers down, and will help to blunt any impact of this variant.
Dr. Schmitz, I want to ask you about the vaccine itself. I'm guessing that you and Dr. Mills, I know Dr. Mills, you've already received the vaccine. I saw your pictures on Facebook. Dr. Schmitz,
I did not put any pictures on Facebook.
Oh, where did I see them? Maybe in the newspaper. I'm sorry.
No, I did not. Anyway, so sorry. I just got one dose, but no, I just got a dose. So,
I thought I saw a picture somewhere. Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you all what your experience receiving the vaccine was like and what the experience of others in your organization has been like. I've heard of some people who have an achy arm, some people who feel kind of under the weather for sort of like 12 to 24 hours. Has that been your experience?
Yes, that was my experience. I was very grateful to be able to receive the vaccine. I did post it on Facebook for a very specific reason that I'll get into later. But in general, my arm was sore. I felt a little bit run down. Of course, I couldn't tell if it was because I had just worked four shifts and also helped with childcare and all these other things. But the second shot was similar. My arm was sore, but I was grateful and happy to receive it. I'm glad that you mentioned that about healthcare providers posting on Facebook or their social media about receiving the vaccine, because I think one of the things that we're seeing in terms of public messaging that's so important is that our healthcare providers are showing confidence in the vaccine, how effective it is, and are using social media to communicate that message effectively.
And I just, and I should, I think, you know, I realize I did post a picture of myself on Facebook working at a vaccine clinic. So that's what you probably saw, Jennifer. But I have been working regularly in the evenings at our COVID vaccine clinics the last 5 or 6 weeks. And yes, especially now that we're seeing people with who are getting second doses, a lot of our frontline healthcare workers, like Dr. Schmitz, I always ask them, how was your first dose? And what they're reporting is exactly what Mike mentioned, that, you know, they often had a sore arm the next day, and they've had maybe a little bit of punky feeling the next day. But the very vast majority of people have reported that they were able to work and carry on the regular activities the next day. And I did get a vaccine just recently because I was working in the vaccine clinic one evening, and we had extra doses at the end of the evening. So I was able to get one of those. It would have been thrown away otherwise. So I was able to get a dose then. And I felt fine. I had a little bit of a sore arm the next day, but otherwise felt fine. And I think my tetanus shot gave me a much sorer arm than several years ago. So than this one. So, yeah. So it's been exciting to see so many people eager to get the vaccine and do so well with it as well.
Dr. Schmitz, I want to ask you quickly before we have to go to a break about readmissions. I read a national article that nationally about 1 in 10 hospitalized COVID patients have to come back to the hospital. And of those, 1 in 3 are dying. What is your experience with that? Are you seeing many people have to come back? And if they come back, is there a, are there traits in common? Are there certain underlying conditions in common that make people seem more likely to have this after they seem healed, have to go back again?
Sure. The limited number of cases that I've seen that have fallen into that have been people who have been readmitted with a bacterial pneumonia, maybe 2 or 3 weeks after their diagnosis of COVID. But I certainly agree that in looking at the data that the sequela of COVID infection and how it's affecting people down the road is important and is going to form part of a sort of a second wave that we're also going to have to be prepared to deal with. You're correct. That's happening as well.
Yeah. And Dr. Mills, what are we learning about people who have had COVID and recovered from it and their immunity? I know that at first they were saying, and when I say they, I just mean what seemed to be in the early research, that perhaps a 3-month immunity. Now I understand we're looking at possibly 6 months or longer.
Yeah, we really don't know yet. And of course, you have to remember, it was only a year ago that we had our first case in the United States that was reported. So we don't know of anybody who's had it for more than a year. So we don't fully know. What we do know is that if you've had COVID and you're interested in getting the vaccine, you may get the vaccine, which we know provides a lot of very robust immunity. We don't know for how long as well, but you can get the vaccine even if you've had the COVID disease, a COVID infection. You should be at least outside of the infectious period, so you should be out of your isolation period, and you should be recovered. You know, you don't have any acute symptoms, for instance. So at least 10 to 14 days after you've been diagnosed and you're feeling fine, then you can get the vaccine. And we've had a number of people we vaccinated who had COVID disease, you know, in December, say, and then they've gotten the vaccine as well.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take your comments and questions about COVID-19 vaccination and more. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Owl Furniture, made in Maine and committed to designs that support a healthy lifestyle at home or office, owlfurniture.com. Cumberland Crossing, a new retirement community offering access to Ocean View at Falmouth's Care Continuum, CumberlandCrossingRC.com. And Woodford F&B in Portland, now offering patio dining and curbside pickup 7 days a week. Menu at WoodfordFB.com.
The national unemployment rate is 6.7%, but individual states and towns have different rates and different challenges.
Our town has been dramatically changed, and we're looking at a tough 5 years ahead of us.
I'm Rima Reis, from Hawaii to Nebraska to Florida, zooming in on 3 economies. That is next time on Marketplace.
And join us for Marketplace this evening at 6:30. There will be a Maine CDC briefing with Dr. Nirav Shah this afternoon at 2. The briefings are now on a Tuesday-Thursday schedule. Tune in to Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, or the Maine Public Facebook page at 2 this afternoon for the live update. The CDC briefings are also archived on our website for later on-demand viewing. You can find the link on the television dropdown at MainePublic.org. Once again, the Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus today at 2 on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and on Facebook.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, two medical experts join me to answer questions about the latest understanding of COVID-19 and the vaccines. My guests, Dr. Michael Schmitz at Southern Maine Healthcare and Dr. Dora Mills at Maine Health. Share your comments and questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Joyce, who's calling from Georgetown. Hi, Joyce. Go ahead.
Hi. Would you please give the phone number for people that want to make appointments?
Absolutely. I'm just trying to search for it myself here. Okay, so you can go to the State of Maine's website. So there's a couple places to go if you're interested in making getting appointments. One is if you Google like Maine, State of Maine COVID vaccine, there is a website that the state has put up that has all the healthcare providers in Maine that are offering vaccine to the public, and it's a it's a Maine DHHS website, I believe. But then Maine Health, we also have one, and it's if you Google Maine Health, all one word, and Maine is in the state of Maine, Maine Health, and you put COVID vaccine in there, it should come up. And there are a couple of it gives you a couple of ways to contact us about getting an appointment. So one is you can call or text, and the call and text number is 877-780-7545. And I'll repeat that, 877-780-7545. So, again, you can call that number or text that number. I say right now, I believe our appointments for this week and next week are fully booked. But if you go to the website, it tells you whether they're booked or not. And we're trying to open up some additional vaccine appointments every day for this week and next week. It's been a little challenging. So you can keep looking back at the website or calling back, and it will let you know. But we do expect over the next couple of weeks, if the vaccine supply goes up or stays steady, then we should be able to offer a lot more appointments, especially the week after next.
Sure. And Dr. Mills, I'll let you know that we have posted the link to the CDC site with the phone numbers for all different organizations on our Facebook page and on our webpage as well. Joyce, good luck to you. And let me follow up to that, Dr. Mills, asking, we're saying over 70. Over 70 and who else? Who needs to be vaccinated as soon as possible?
So right now at Maine Health, we are vaccinating as per the Maine CDC's guidance. Anybody 70 and over, any first responder, so law enforcement, EMS, and firefighters. So I think a lot of them are getting vaccinated with EMS, through EMS. And then thirdly, our healthcare personnel, so people who work in healthcare settings and deliver some kind of healthcare. So those are the three major categories we're vaccinating. We want to vaccinate as many people as possible. We're vaccinating anybody who meets those criteria from the public. And the vaccine is free. So we seek reimbursement from your insurance if you have insurance, just to help defray some of the costs. But there's no out-of-pocket expense at all to people getting the vaccine. And if you don't have insurance, you don't need to worry. So there's no charge for the vaccine. So we're very excited about about offering this vaccine. It's just been really heartwarming and very exciting to be working in the clinics, as I'm doing several evenings a week, because people, I've never seen people so excited to get a vaccine. It's just been really, really heartwarming.
Joyce, thanks so much for calling. Joyce was calling from Georgetown, so this next question is probably going to apply to her too. Lorna sent an email. I'm a nurse practitioner student living in the Mid-Coast and want to know where I can get a vaccine. And Dr. Mills, the answer to that is Mid-Coast Hospital, right?
Yes, but the phone number I gave and the website at Maine Health is for all of our hospitals, and that includes Mid-Coast Hospital. Mid-Coast Hospital is part of the Maine Health healthcare system. So if you go to the website that I mentioned or make the call, then please, you'll get instructions for being, but just make sure that you let them know there's a voice that comes on that directs you. And so just make sure to let them know that you're a healthcare provider, and they'll direct you to how to get vaccine.
Sure, we'll go to Alan calling from Falmouth. Hi, Alan, go ahead.
Hi. I've tried to find the following information but have been unable. Is there any information about the safety or contraindications of the vaccine in people that are transplant recipients?
Good question, Alan. Go ahead. Dr. Mills, I hear you about to answer.
Yes, very good question. There are actually very few contraindications, which is really exciting about this vaccine. And people who are immune suppressed generally can take the vaccine as well. But you should, if you've had a solid organ transplant, for instance, or organ transplant, you should probably want to talk to your doctor just to make sure. But in general, that is being immune suppressed is not a contraindication. The issues for that people do need to be aware of is if you've had a vaccine in the prior 2 weeks, you shouldn't get COVID vaccine. And the reason is that your body, your immune system won't respond as well to the COVID vaccine if it's already trying to respond to a prior vaccine that you got within the prior 14 days. And then the second issue that we come across, it's rare, but people with severe allergies. So people who've had a severe allergic reaction, such as anaphylaxis, after getting any a previous dose of the vaccine or the COVID vaccine. So that would be somebody who's already had the first dose, obviously, or who's had a severe reaction such as anaphylaxis to any ingredient that is in the vaccine. And those ingredients include polyethylene glycol, which is found in a lot of products such as laxatives and toothpaste, as well as polysorbate. And then if you get the first dose of the vaccine and you had any immediate kind of reaction within the first 4 hours of just like a rash or hives or anything, then also you should be evaluated. So there are, in most of those people, many of them can go on to get the vaccine, but they should see their PCP or an allergist first. So it's very rare, the numbers of people who really shouldn't get the vaccine, but those are a couple of considerations. One website that's very good, I'll just put out real quickly, is if you Google on the web, CDC, so it's US CDC, COVID vaccine clinical considerations. CDC COVID vaccine clinical considerations. It brings up this really wonderful website that goes through all the types of health issues that people may have, such as being immune suppressed, being after, you know, having a post-transplant, and the like, and then they are being pregnant or lactating, and it takes you through what is known, and so you can, it's easier to make a decision.
Alan, thank you so much for your call. Yeah, we're going to go to Rebecca on Facebook. She writes, I'd love to volunteer to help with the vaccine rollout. Who can I call to find out about doing this? Dr. Schmitz in York County, is there something set up for people there?
We're not recruiting for that at this time, but we recognize that, this is going to take a concerted effort from multiple agencies. I wanted to make one comment about allergic reactions to follow up on what Dora said, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I think it's important that the public is also aware that the incidence of those allergic reactions is very, very low. It's being followed by the CDC. It's published in the CDC's monthly and weekly mortality report. But it's also part of the reason why the protocol for when you go to get your vaccination is that you're going to be monitored and observed for somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes based on whether or not you have a history of anaphylaxis or allergic reactions. It's one of the things that any vaccine clinic is going to be doing to help keep people safe, even though the incidence of those severe allergic reactions is so low.
Thank you.
I have an email here from Nancy. My son's family has recovered from COVID-19. After they all test negative, would it be a safe time for me to visit my grandchildren? Dr. Mills.
So it depends, I don't know what this person's situation is, but it depends on the level of risk that you want to take. So even though they've recovered from COVID, it doesn't mean they can't get it again. So, there are ways that you can, there's a whole spectrum of risk. So just going inside their house and sitting with a group of people of, 5 or 10 people sitting together closely and not masking, obviously that's very high risk. And then the other spectrum is not visiting at all. And then there are ways you can mitigate risk. So visiting outside with masks on, visiting inside. And I actually visited with somebody before the surge, about 3 months ago, where it was cold, like in October, and I had two windows open and the heat on. So it was just, and a fan on, just trying to keep the air circulated. And we sat, 10 feet apart and masked, and we were able to visit a bit. So there's ways to mitigate risk. So ventilation, not with visiting with a smaller group as possible, masking, distancing. Those are ways you can try to mitigate the risk. And I wouldn't take a chance right now in terms of just thinking, well, they're immune, so I don't have to worry about it, because we just don't know. And some people can transmit it even after they've healed up a bit, and some people they can get it again. So I think you just want to be careful.
All right. Thanks for that. We're going to move on to Angela, who's calling from Northport. Hi, Angela. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is for Dr. Mills. Could you please further explain Maine Health's process for communicating with the public? I ask this because last week, my husband and I both went to the Maine Health website and registered to receive updates for when appointment scheduling would be available. Neither one of us received an update, and we heard at 6 o'clock this morning on Maine Public that Maine Health had been taking appointments for the last couple of days, I guess. And so my question is, why did we not receive updates? Also, I called the number and looked at the website this morning, and all it says is check back tomorrow, and I'd like to know at what time. Thank you.
And those are very excellent questions, and I apologize. It has been, we've been literally just overwhelmed with the response. So as I mentioned, we had over 70,000 calls yesterday, and that was before the phone number was put up on the state website, or most of those were before it was put up on the state website. So I'm not sure the answer to the first question about why you didn't get a notice back. I'll talk to our communications people and try to find that answer out. I think that if people are in the 70 years of age and older, we are in that category, or healthcare personnel or first responders. We are trying to reach out to them as much as we can, but we're also getting flooded by people, calling us as well. So we've had people doing outbound calls, and we've had people doing just responding to inbound calls. But the inbound call volume was so much greater that we just simply couldn't get enough people even answering those phones. But we are opening up. One of the real restraints right now is just the simple lack of vaccine. So we are, booking as many vaccine appointments as we can to match the vaccine supply. We are hoping over the next 2 or 3 weeks that we get more vaccine and we can open up a lot more appointments. So I just feel so bad because I know people really want to get the vaccine and we want them to get it. Many of us, including Dr. Schmitz and myself, are, in there in the clinics and are off hours and trying to get vaccine as much as quickly as we can into people's arms. But we are also just constrained by not only the volume of calls, but also by the fact that we just don't have enough vaccine right now. When you think about, we have to vaccinate, over a million people, hopefully eventually, and we're getting about 18,000 doses a week. That's just not—it's not much when you match it up to the numbers of people who need vaccine, and it's a two-dose vaccine too. So people have to come back a second time. So it's going to be a while. It's going to take a long time, I think, to get everybody vaccinated. But we certainly want to be back in touch with everybody, what we've told we would be.
Dr. Angela, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better. Bangor.com/spreadkindness. And Bristol Seafood, a Maine company committed to sustainable fishing practices and partnering with the Maine Stewardship Council.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Music performance venues have largely been silent in the pandemic, but the recent COVID relief bill has some help for struggling stages.
We realize that our venues are economic drivers, so if we survive, the restaurant next door has a much better chance.
That's next time on Here and Now.
And join us for Here and Now coming up at noon. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of Penobscot Theatre Company's production of Flyin' Solo, streaming online from January 21st through February 7th. These live performances, streamed in real time, give audiences the best seats in the house for original stories told with humor and heart. Flyin' Solo offers a unique theatrical memoir experience told in the actors' own voices. For complete details, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. I'm talking with two medical experts to learn more about the spread of COVID-19 and vaccinations. Joining me, Dr. Dora Mills with Maine Health and Dr. Michael Schmitz with Southern Maine Healthcare. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to read this email from Ben because it addresses something that has been in the news. Ben writes, this morning, the three Piscataquis County Commissioners signed a, quote, protest that said in part, whereas research and study of the history of pandemics shows that face coverings and lockdowns only worsen and lengthen the time of the virus's track through the populace. Whereas the same research shows that face coverings, while not preventing the virus, cause respiratory disease and pneumonia with far worse devastation to the population than the virus itself. Whereas now reports of pneumonia and respiratory disease caused from face coverings are starting to rise throughout our country. It goes on. And I'm wondering if you could comment on these assertions, Dr. Schmitz, that are not only in sort of alternative media now, but county commissioners in Maine are talking about this idea that face masks do more harm than good. Is it true?
No, it is not true. That is flat out false. The science and the research behind COVID clearly supports the benefits and the protective effect of social distancing, masking, and also vaccination. I think that this person's question speaks to a really important issue occurring in our society right now, which is that the science behind this vaccine and how it works and how effective it is can be backed up by people like myself, by Dr. Mills, who can explain it, who looked at it, who can read it, and are happy to answer your questions about it. But the assertion that this person is making, in my opinion, needs to be called out for what it is, which is fraud. What I see as an emergency department physician is that when that type of information is dispelled so irresponsibly, it is going to continue to hurt people. And that, as someone who's on the front lines of this, I mean, it just breaks my heart. It's not that the information isn't just untrue. It's that it's irresponsible to share that if you can't back it up, and it is hurting people.
Liza on Facebook asks, when will essential childcare workers be eligible for a vaccine? Our adult daughter's childcare center has been open since the original shutdown. There have been contacts with the children and their families. these teachers need the vaccine. Dr. Mills, I know that this is a Maine CDC decision, and we are having Dr. Shaw on Maine Calling on the 28th, but I'm wondering if you happen to know.
Sure. And, you know, I've been following this very closely, and it's we want everybody to get vaccinated, including, oh, my goodness, God bless our daycare workers and our child care providers and our school teachers and everybody who've been, so many people have been on the front lines of this pandemic, and people working at grocery stores and retail and everywhere else, they're on the front lines. And so we want to make sure to get them vaccinated as soon as we can. But, of course, the decisions that most states right now have made is to, because the vaccine supply is so, is really trickling in. It's not flowing in, it's trickling in. So the decision that many, if not most states have made, is to focus right now on those people who are at highest risk for severe disease, at highest risk for being hospitalized, at highest risk from dying. And those are overwhelmingly people who are older. So people 70 right now in Maine, vaccinating people 70 and older. I think there are about 285,000 people 65 and older in Maine. So I know we're focused on 70 and older, but you can, and I think there's about 200,000 people who are 70 and older. So you kind of do the math and you realize you have to get, if you want to get even offer all of the vaccine, but assuming not every one of them will take it, even just 90 or 80% of them vaccine, and you realize that it's a two-dose vaccine. So this is if it's 200,000 people 70 and older, that's 400,000 doses of vaccine. So this is going to take a while. This is not just a marathon. It's kind of it's an ultra marathon in some ways. It's going to take a few months to be able to get everybody vaccinated whom we desperately want to vaccinate.
We'll go to Heidi, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Heidi. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Mills. Thank you. I have an appointment on February 4th at Blue Hill Hospital to be vaccinated. And when I heard you earlier in the program say that we are making appointments for this week and next week because we know we have the vaccine, my heart went down into my feet. And I thought, oh, I'm thinking that I can celebrate and perhaps I can't. So the question is, would places be making appointments for people if they did not have the vaccine available for them?
Yeah, we've been very careful. And where did you say your vaccine appointment is? I didn't catch it.
It's in Blue Hill at the hospital on February 4th.
Yeah. So I didn't, and I can't speak for Blue Hill Hospital because it's not in our system. That's a Northern Light Health system, I believe. But I do know my colleagues at Northern Light Health, we're in touch almost daily. And so I know we're all trying to be very, very careful and just provide appointments for people knowing that we have vaccine enough. So, is there any guarantee? I can't completely guarantee it, but I know that we're all being very conscientious to make sure that we're not giving people appointments and false hope, in essence, unless we know we've got vaccine for them for that time period.
Heidi, thanks for your call and good luck to you. I hope that February 4th appointment is your golden ticket. I have an email, Facebook post from Rebecca here. From Lee, an email from Lee. Could your guest comment on utilizing Maine National Guard medical resources to increase the ratio of vaccinations to vaccines received? Dr. Schmitz, and as you're doing planning in York County incident management, are you talking about calling out the Guard?
That's not something that the York County incident management team would be able to do. But I can tell you that what we are recognizing based on our experience is that we are certainly on the cusp of, I think, what's going to become the greatest public health mobilization of our generation. It's going to be an all hands on deck type of approach when it gets to community vaccination. And I think what we're seeing is that we're going to need to enlist assistance from all available vaccinators to coordinate this effectively.
Dr. Mills, do you know anything about thinking about and the National Guard or having some sort of drive-through site at some point? We're all, I guess, hoping that there will be a day where there will be more vaccines coming into the state on a weekly basis than there are right now.
Yes, And we are looking at all of those. And we've been planning with the state and with other healthcare systems for several months now, really. And I do believe there are, you have to ask Dr. Shaw that next week, but I do believe that there are, you know, situations where the guard can be called for this, for especially some of the mass vaccine sites. A lot of people do ask about drive-through, like you mentioned, and you can see it in some other states they're doing that. They tend to be warm states, so it's easy to do that in January and February in Maine. But also, this vaccine, these two vaccines that we have, Moderna and Pfizer, are it's very different than flu vaccine. And as Dr. Schmitz mentioned, you do have to sit for 15 to 30 minutes and wait to make, and again, the reactions are extremely rare, but we also don't want people waiting in a car across a parking lot and for us not to be able to reserve them. The vaccines also have to be maintained at a specific sub-zero temperatures. So there are a lot of factors, and we also have to maintain distancing of people and masking while they're in the clinics. And so that's why we're looking at some a lot of large sites, whereas, you know, flu vaccine, you can kind of put in a backpack and go out to where people are and vaccinate them. That's not the case with these vaccines right now. But we are working on, as Dr. Schmidt said, really pulling out all the stops. And we are, even in the middle of this surge, Maine Health, we are redeploying people for this effort. We have a lot of volunteers, which has been very heartwarming. And I think that, you know, you're about to see a real amazing few months with this vaccine being with the high effectiveness that we see in both Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. This could be probably, you know, the biggest public health success in our lifetimes. It's too early to say, but it definitely could be, has that potential for sure.
I'm going to go to Nick calling from Winthrop. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I heard Dr. Mills say earlier that she got a vaccine because there were some left over at the end of the day that would have been thrown out. And I know I'm sure there's lots of other people. We'd jump in our car at a moment's notice and get there with their vaccines. Is there a way to notify people of that?
Yeah, and we've set up an on-call system. We were just vaccinating employees who were around that we could just call, you know, out of these clinic sites, because this one, for instance, at Maine Medical Center. And then after a while, we started realizing we need to have other people on call. So we are doing that sometimes, and some other clinics are doing this as well, just trying to have people in mind. But we've been also and some of the healthcare providers who were vaccinating at the clinics, like myself, that's how I happened to get the vaccine. There was extra doses at the end of the clinic. But also, we're right there, very close to people, one after another, vaccinating them. So we've been also making sure that our over time, if vaccine allows, that we're vaccinating the vaccinators. But yes, that's certainly another option too, is to be on call.
All right. Nick, thanks.
Nick brought up a good point in that, you know, these vaccines are coming in multi-dose vials. So if you have eight people in a clinic and you have two doses left, that vaccine can't go to waste. So the responsibility of the folks running these clinics is to just continue to distribute it effectively and not let anything go to waste as far as you know, this very precious resource is concerned.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll move on to an email from Donna. Are there any antivirals similar to Tamiflu or for the flu virus in the pipeline for the treatment of COVID? Dr. Schmitz, do you know?
I know that we're using remdesivir currently, but I'm not familiar if there are other antivirals in development. And that's done in combination with two other therapies, dexamethasone, which we know is very effective, and also in some cases, use of monoclonal antibodies.
An email here from Brian. He writes, I am a physician here in Maine. I'd like to remind everyone that getting the vaccine does not mean that you can let your guard down or stop social distancing and wearing masks. Same goes for if you've had COVID or had a recent negative test. We all need to stay the course until this pandemic is over, regardless of who has been vaccinated. Brian, thank you so much for that. And yes. And Dr. Schmitz, I'm guessing you're going to echo that sentiment.
Oh, absolutely. As effective as this vaccine is in preventing serious disease and hospitalization, especially with what we're facing with this new strain that might cause more illness. It's important that we look at vaccine not just as one tool, but that people continue to mask, to social distance, and to most importantly, recognize that their behaviors are going to impact other people and whether or not the people around them get ill.
We'll go to Bob, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have an elderly neighbor who I assist with daily living activities. And I think I've gotten her convinced to take the virus, the vaccine, but she does not have a primary care physician. Is that going to be an issue?
No, she can get on the same website, call the same phone numbers, or text the same phone numbers that I gave out earlier. And I think Jennifer mentioned that they're up on Maine Public's website as well. And there's no insurance is not a barrier. So the vaccine is free to people whether they have insurance or not.
Thank you very much. That was what I was hoping.
Yeah, Bob, thank you so much for your question. Let's see here. We'll go to Cindy in Livermore Falls. Cindy, we're almost out of time, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead quickly, please. Thank you.
Hi. My husband was calling to get an appointment and kept receiving the recording that said all available appointments were full. And then he got an appointment on the fifth call. Someone did answer, and he was booking his appointment through Farmington. So I just want to say folks should not necessarily give up on calling today.
That's a great bit of advice. Dr. Mills, we just have a few seconds left. Go ahead and give us your final pitch for getting on the list.
Yes. Well, I keep calling. As she said, persistence, I think, is paying off. And we're just we're thrilled to be able to offer this vaccine at Maine Health to anybody in the public. We're very, very excited about this major public health initiative and to be a partner with so many others on this in the state. So we look forward to making sure everybody gets a vaccine who wants it, and hope that everybody wants it as well. So thank you so much, and thanks so much for hanging in. It's going to be a little bit of a long winter. It's still January, but spring will come, and I think there'll be all signs say we should have a lot more vaccine by then, and it'll be warmer as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Cindy, for your call and for our guest today. You just heard Dr. Dora Mills, Chief Health Improvement Officer for Maine Health. And also with us for the hour, Dr. Michael Schmitz. He is an emergency department attending physician at Southern Maine Healthcare, and he's also the medical director for York County Incident Management. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can go to our website, MaineCalling.org, to find information that was mentioned today on the show. Also, you can hear previous programs. Also, at 2 o'clock today on radio and television and on the web, the CDC briefing with Dr. Nirav Shah. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing, easternbasements.com.